Okay. That piece of music comes from Muji Mala Music, and you can find it on YouTube. Muji's got an interesting story. He's of Jamaican parentage, and he ended up on the streets of London. And he was just a street person, but he would disseminate wisdom here and there. And eventually he found himself with quite a following, and much of his following seems to be very musically inclined and have beautiful voices. So it's been a good source for me to find wonderful chanting. And I just wanted to tell you about that in case you're interested in finding some of that kind of music yourself. So what we're going to talk about tonight is the seven bright lights of Paramahansa Yogananda. And I have to thank Larry for this. This is Larry's a good researcher. And a few years ago, he sent me a couple of pages from two different SRF East West magazines. And they talked about who Master had made a Yogacharya. And Master had so many more than seven bright lights, as you know. He had tremendous souls. He had so much adoration and respect for the spiritual greatness of Sister Gaia Mata. And Sister Gaia Mata is one of Seattle's own. She was married to a University of Washington professor, and they had a house over in Montlake, and they had one of the most wonderful libraries. They had one of the greatest libraries in their home on President Abraham Lincoln in the entire country. They also had a tremendous spiritual library. And Mother told me once that she used to go over to their home, and Sister Gaia Mata would let her borrow books. She would take them home, spiritual books. And it was so wonderful. You know, when I met Mother, she was already in her 70s. And to hear her talk about this older woman that she so much looked up to, you know, made me realize that Mother hadn't always been in her 70s. So it's wonderful to hear about, and it's wonderful to hear about Master talk about her. It's wonderful to hear about Master talk about James J. Lin, Rajashree, Janakananda. You know, he was really, I guess ultimately, you know, must have been one of the greatest disciples of Yogananda, because he became in charge of the organization after Master's passing. But what's interesting is those two great spiritual giants, Master never granted the title of Yogacharya, and perhaps he didn't need to. So to the best of our knowledge of what's been documented, there's only been seven Yogacharyas that Master granted that title to. And so what I thought we would do tonight is take a look at those seven and see if we can learn something. So we're going to start off with the autobiography of a yogi. On the eve of my departure for the United States, found me in Sri Yukteswar's holy presence. Forget you were born a Hindu and don't be an American. Take the best of them both, Mother, Master said in his calm way of wisdom. Be your true self, a child of God. Seek and incorporate into your being the best qualities of all your brothers, scattered over the earth in various races. Then he blessed me. All those who come to you with faith, seeking God, will be helped. As you look at them, the spiritual current emanating from your eyes will enter into their brains and change their material habits, making them more God conscious. He went on. Your lot to attract sincere souls is very good. Everywhere you go, even in a wilderness, you'll find friends. Both of his blessings have been amply demonstrated. I came alone to America, into a wilderness without a single friend. But there I found thousands ready to receive the time-tested soul teachings. Ah, yes. He certainly did. I have to put on my glasses for this, because this is very small print. This is from the November 1951 issue of East West, the SRF publication. And says Paramahansa Ji announced that several of the members present might henceforth use the title Yogacharya. Now, this is in November of 1951, so this is very late in the game. We must remember that Master left his body in March of 1952. So I think he was giving credit where credit was due here and setting these people up to carry on after his passing. So Paramahansa Ji announced that several of the members present might henceforth use the title Yogacharya, teacher of yoga. Mr. M.W. Lewis, we know him as Dr. M.W. Lewis, Mr. Jose Coron, Swami Premananda, J. Oliver Black, Reverend C. Bernard, and Reverend K. Michael. So that's six individuals. And this issue goes on to say the garden party program on Sunday, August 26th, was a full one. The guests were first entertained with musical selections by Miss Eleanor Mays, soprano, Mr. Eleno Giovannetti, tenor, and Mr. John Van Leeuwen, pianist. A buffet lunch was then served to the garden, following which everyone gathered on the tennis court for the final talks and a demonstration of yoga postures. Dr. M.W. Lewis of the Encinitas SRF colony was master of ceremonies for the afternoon, and after formally welcoming the assembled guests, he introduced Reverend C. Bernard, who explained the purpose and guided the demonstration of yoga postures. Now, you remember that Reverend C. Bernard was one of the ones that Master had just made a Yogacharya. In the next paragraph, we see that Dr. Lewis then introduced Reverend Mildred Hamilton, who shares with her husband, Ralph Hamilton, the joint leadership of the SRF Seattle Center, voicing at the outset the thought which permeated all the subsequent talks. The Reverend Mrs. Hamilton said, I have often wished that I might acknowledge publicly all that our beloved Master has done for me. Some of you do not know, perhaps, how great a saint you have in your guru. You all know of the miracles of Christ, how he healed the sick, raised the dead. I am a living example to show that our own Master has that power, for he has done it for me not once, but many times. I hope that in some measure I can convey my gratitude, which I have tried to express in this little poem. Out of God's paradise you came, filling my waiting soul with his ecstasy. Teaching of love divine, wisdom from heaven, each word a jewel whose luster time cannot deaden. To you I owe my life. Through your intercession, God granted me more time to learn his wondrous lessons. Oft I have wondered how I could repay all the love and beauty you have given. Now, that was November 1951. If we jump forward to September 1952, we find in the East West magazine a little aside here. And it says, and this is what they're referring to here, at the Kriya Yoga Initiation Ceremony in 1951, so once again, right before Master's passing, the last one which Paramahansa Yogananda attended, the Master conferred upon several SRF ministers the title of Yogacharya. The following ministers may now use the title Yogacharya, teacher of yoga. Mildred Hamilton, Seattle, Washington, and Jose M. Coron, Mexico City. And Jose Coron was already mentioned in the 1951 issue, so now we have seven Yogacharyas that are officially documented that Paramahansa Yogananda gave that title to. So in this little session tonight, we're going to look at each one of these tremendous souls and see what we can learn. We're going to start with Dr. M.W. Lewis, a highly advanced soul Very close to Yogananda was Dr. Lewis, born in 1893, died in 1960, Boston. Yogananda wrote him, "Let only God consciousness reign between us. Let the everlasting spirit tie be stronger than ever. Their meeting in this life was a renewed friendship in God, and will go on in the next." As Yogananda once told Dr. Lewis, "We have lived a good life together. It seems only yesterday that we met. In a little while, we shall be separated, but soon we'll be together again." Dr. Lewis came down to the material plane in March 1893, just 2 months after Yogananda. It was about that same time when also Rajashri and Oliver Black incarnated. These four men came down as a group of friends, it seems. A birthday sidelight. Yogananda for many years avoided celebrating his birthday and kept the date a secret until 1939, when his younger brother Bishnu came to visit him from India. From Bishnu, the disciples finally learned of Yogananda's birth date, and his birthday was celebrated for the first time in the West. But alas, Yogananda didn't reveal the year of his birth. Thus, his birthday cake used to be decorated with only one candle, which he blew out while having his wish. "I still have a little strength of breath. I must take care I don't blow the cake away." Through the years, it became a tradition at Yogananda's birthday gatherings that Dr. Lewis would try to cajole his guru into revealing his age, but Yogananda always refused. "My age is infinite." Dr. Lewis was a married man with a wife, Mildred, and two children, Bradford and Brenda. Their family lived in Boston, where Dr. Lewis was a dentist and had his practice. After Yogananda arrived in America in Boston on September 19th, 1920, he soon met Alice Hasey, sister Yogamata, who invited her friend Mildred Lewis to come and meet him at their community church. After meeting him, Mrs. Lewis wanted her husband to meet Yogananda too. Dr. Lewis did on Christmas Eve of 1920. What is that single eye the Bible speaks of? It was a question which had haunted Dr. Lewis for a long time. "Can you show it to me?" Yogananda on the spot showed him the heavenly glory of the spiritual eye and the thousand-petaled lotus. Dr. Lewis was ecstatic. He became the first American Kriyabond and Yogananda's friend for a lifetime. But he almost got into deep trouble with Mildred. Go read Treasures Against Time. That's a book that Brenda, Dr. Lewis's daughter, wrote. Yogananda writes in his autobiography that he lived in Boston in humble circumstances while trying to start his mission. Dr. Lewis at times invited Yogananda to stay at his home in Boston. When Yogananda in 1923 left for his lecture campaign, he asked Dr. Lewis to remain in Boston, to lead the meditation group there, and to raise money to support his tours. Throughout the years, Yogananda and Dr. Lewis remained in contact. Outwardly and inwardly, Dr. Lewis later came twice annually from Boston to Encinitas. In 1929, Yogananda returned to Boston to give a lecture there. In 1942, he returned there again with Swami Premananda. He recounts in the autobiography, "Sir," Dr. Lewis said to me, smiling, "during your early years in America, you stayed in the city in a single room without a bath. I wanted you to know that in Boston possesses some luxurious apartments." In 1945, Yogananda asked Mr. and Mrs. Lewis to move to Encinitas. For Dr. Lewis's life now had changed significantly. A time of increased spiritual responsibility began. He lectured at the Encinitas and San Diego temples, later also in Hollywood, giving up to 7 lectures a week. He also was put in charge of the Encinitas colony. Probably Gayamata's health didn't allow her to do the job anymore. Sister Gayamata, we talked about her living in Seattle with her husband, University of Washington professor. After he passed away, she moved to Mount Washington, and after that, she moved to Encinitas. So in addition, Dr. Lewis was in charge of the monks' training in Encinitas. Yogananda also authorized him to give Kriya initiations, which he did until his passing. To get rest, he spent one day a week in silence in Rajashree's Borrego house in the desert. When Yogananda passed away in 1952, Rajashree became the SRF president and Dr. Lewis the vice president, remaining in that position until his passing. Swami Kriyananda in 1960 was elected to follow him. The president by then was Dayamata. After Kriyananda, Taramata was made vice president, then Merlindi Mata. Dr. Lewis remained throughout very active in his ministry. His passing was truly spectacular. It was April 13, 1960. Dr. Lewis was in hospital. In the evening, he took a short nap. When he awoke, he told Mildred, "I want to sit up straight." She arranged the pillows at his back, and he assumed the lotus pose. She recounts, "His hands were upturned, his eyes closed. I sat beside the bed thinking that I too would meditate. I was aroused in 2 or 3 minutes by a tremendous sound. It resembled the suction sound of a huge pump or the breath sound of a giant kriya. With the sound came a great flash of spiritual light whose brilliance might be compared to that given forth by a million electric light bulbs. Doctor's blue eyes opened, piercing flashes of blue light came from them. Then they were locked at the Christ center in the forehead. His head lowered somewhat, but his body remained erect. For an instant, the face of Swami Yukteswar appeared, enveloping Doctor's face. In that moment, in lotus posture, with a straight spine, with a tremendous kriya sound, the flash of white light looking into the spiritual eye, and with the divine presence of Sri Yukteswar, Dr. Lewis made his glorious exit from this world stage. There can hardly be a better proof for Yogananda's promise. For those who stay in tune to the end, I, or one of the other great masters, will be there to usher them into the divine kingdom. Dr. Lewis is a tremendous soul, as you can tell from this description. There's actually 2 books written about him if you'd like to do a little further research on him. Now we get to another Yogacharya who I've always been fascinated with, but I didn't know much about. And this is Mr. Jose Coron of Mexico City. And I've got a picture here from 1961. It shows Mr. Eagle Goron, Sisters Durgamata, Dayamata, and Muktimata, and Yogacharya J.M. Coron and Brother Anandamoy. The SRF headquarters in 1961. So imagine if you were a person that spoke Spanish and lived in Mexico City, and you became a follower of masters. And master called you into his study one time and he said, "I want you to spread these teachings throughout South America." Where would you begin? What if you were called upon to spread these teachings throughout North America and Canada? I mean, it's just, when I think of these missionaries and these evangelists, I think what an overwhelming task, and yet they were up to it. SRF International Headquarters entrusted Mr. Coron with the task of translating SRF books and lessons into Spanish, distributing them, and conducting annual tours of Latin American countries, founding SRF groups, and giving initiations in Kriya Yoga. Some of these tours included visits to, there's SRF groups now that Jose Coron started in Venezuela, in Uruguay, in Argentina. This man was a tireless worker for this cause, for God. This is from the website down in Uruguay. Mr. Coron gave classes to Uruguayan students in 1958 and conducted Kriya Yoga initiations in 1967. This is a little story about Jose Coron that's related by Kriyananda. So Yogacharya Coron says, was badly in need of a job, but for a long time could find no work anywhere. Then one day an excellent offer came from a company in Matamoros. Taking that job would mean moving away from Mexico City. I therefore wrote Master to request his permission to put the SRF Center in someone else's charge. My letter was to me a mere formality. I was sure Master would congratulate me on my good luck. Imagine my surprise then when he replied by telegram, "No, absolutely not. Under no circumstances, whatever, accept that job." I admit I was a little bit upset. Even so, I obeyed him. 1 month later, the news came out in the papers. The company that had offered me that job was exposed for fraud. Its officers, including the man who had taken the post I'd been offered, were sent to prison. He hadn't been aware of the firm's dishonesty, just as I would not have been. Because of the position he held, however, he was imprisoned with the rest. It was only by Master's grace that I was spared that calamity. Yoga once said to SRF Center leader in Mexico City, "Señor J.M. Corón, I lost sight of you for a few incarnations, but now I will never lose touch with you again." Señor Corón, therefore, would sometimes remind him, "Remember your promise." "I won't forget," Master would reply. "I will never lose touch with you again." What beautiful reassurance. And number three, this is one of the most fascinating ones to me, is Swami Premananda. And the reason it's so fascinating is because it's an organization outside of SRF that Master encouraged. The Self-Revelation Church of Absolute Monism, in the United States of America had its beginnings in 1920. In that year, Swami Yogananda Paramahansa came to Boston, Massachusetts to represent India at the Congress of Religions. While in this country, he formed numerous groups of followers. At Swami Yogananda's suggestion, some of his followers in Washington, D.C. later invited one of his students at his school in Ranchi, India, to be their leader. So you remember that from the autobiography that Master started the school for boys in India, in Ranchi, in 1917. And then after getting it up and being very successful, that's when he got word from God that he was to come to America. But while he was there, you know, he was in contact with many of the boys, and many of them were bright lights in God. And this is one of those boys that grew up. And when the center in Washington, D.C. needed a leader, Swami Yogananda suggested this young man from the Ranchi school. So the young man known as Brahmacharya Jodin came in 1928 to organize the church. He was in complete charge of its spiritual and administrative activities for 50 years. He built that church up, and he didn't leave the body until 1978. As the membership grew, rented quarters became inadequate. On October 23, 1938, the group met for the first time in the chapel that Brahmacharya Jodin had built for them at 4748 Western Avenue Northwest in Washington. The chapel had been built without any appeal for funds from the members. When the Golden Lotus Temple was completed in 1952, the chapel became the Church of the Children. As Brahmacharya Jodin became better known, he received an increasing number of invitations to speak in synagogues, seminaries, and Christian churches of practically all denominations. He was also in great demand as a speaker for business and civic organizations such as the Lions and Rotary Clubs. In 1941, Brahmacharya Jodin was consecrated as a Swami by his guru, Swami Yogananda Paramahansa, the guru preceptor of the church. He took the name of Swami Premananda, which means love of supreme wisdom. In 1951, Swami Yogananda granted Swami Premananda the title of Yogacharya. So that's our first three Yogacharyas. And the fourth, I believe that Larry had a chance to meet J. Oliver Black. And J. Oliver Black, as we know, was born the same year as Master in 1893. But he had quite a long life. He lived until 1989. So this description says he's not a very well-known disciple, but I think in those circles in the Midwest, he's quite well-known. But it says he's not a very well-known disciple, even though Yogananda described him as second in self-realization right after Rajasri, and third was Gayamata. He was thus an extremely lofty company. We are speaking of a saint of the highest stature. That must be the reason why he, as a family man and founder of his own spiritual community, was listed until his death in 1989 amongst the official SRF ministers authorized to give Kriya initiation. Oliver Black was born in Grover Hill, Ohio in 1893, the same year Yogananda was born, who was only 8 months older. As Rajasri, Oliver Black was a self-made man, a millionaire industrialist selling automobile parts in Detroit. He was an energetic and highly talented person who started on a very small scale in his garage with an investment of only $500. By the time Oliver Black retired from his business in 1952, it was valued at $35 million per year. My goodness. He and his wife Ethel had two children, a son Robert, who was killed while a pilot in World War II, and a daughter Phyllis. His wife died in 1970. Oliver Black met Yogananda in 1931 at a private party. It was instantaneous recognition. I instantly recognized him for the spiritual giant he was. Oliver's life of discipleship began that day and bore wonderful fruit. He changed the whole direction of my life. It must have been a deeply fulfilling time for Yogananda. He met Rajasri, Oliver Black, Dayamata, all in the same period, a time when Gayanamata moved to Mount Washington. All these shining stars in his spiritual heaven. Oliver Black described his inner state at that time in colorful words. When I first met him, at 38 years, I was afraid to get half a mile away from a drugstore. I was a regular hypochondriac, took pills for laxative, aspirins for headaches, and probably would have taken tranquilizers if they had had them. I was a victim of inner pressures too, like all my colleagues. Besides running a successful company, I studied and taught a small philosophy class. We were trying to find an answer to man's existence. The outward search for truth was now over. Yogananda taught me where to find it. You might say he handed me a blueprint, and I've been following it ever since. However, the change Oliver Black made was not as big as Yogananda would have liked. His dharma was different than Rajasri's. For many years, Yogananda encouraged Oliver Black to withdraw from his business and start teaching other truth seekers. Yogananda kept telling me to get out of business, but I just wouldn't listen. True, Oliver Black was the leader of the SRF Center in Detroit, but his guru had much greater plans for him. In May 1951, he wrote him, "With your organizational power, you can do something much greater, much more lasting, much easier, and much more secure than present-day business organizations in which one works to pay taxes, ruining his health and happiness. Detroit, being in the center of the United States, has a great opportunity to draw true seekers, both from east and west. I would like nothing better than for you to establish a sub-headquarters there." In August 1951, Yogananda gave Oliver Black, in a ceremony, the spiritual title of Yogacharya, together with Reverend Bernard Cole and about five others. That was also the time when Yogananda gave Rajasri his sannyas vows, the orange robe and his monastic name. There is a photo in which shows that ceremony. Bhaktananda has seen it too. Researchers can find it on the internet. After his last meeting with Oliver Black, Yogananda lovingly remarked, "Did you see God in his eyes?" Yogananda passed on soon after that in March of 1952. It was a year of dramatic change for Oliver Black. Yogananda had repeatedly told him that if he did not leave his business willingly, something would happen to force him into the spiritual direction. And so it happened. In 1952, through a hostile stock market takeover, Oliver Black lost most of what he had built up with so much effort and most of his wealth. He still remained a modestly wealthy man, though, but now he retired from his business, finally. A new phase started in his life. He created a yoga school, Yogacharya, Oliver Black's Self-Realization Yoga, in which he taught yoga asanas and trained other teachers, again with huge success. In 1966, his weekly Sunday meditation and lecture services were attended by 200 to 300 people. His hatha yoga teachers were reaching thousands of students, and his yearly festival of yoga in Detroit was attended by over 3,000 seekers. His was the most successful yoga and meditation activity in the United States at that time. Oliver Black's main focus, of course, was teaching meditation and the deeper aspects of yoga. He initiated all his yoga teachers in the highest techniques of meditation, but for some reason in the early 70s, his success began to fade. By 1971, he had sold off all of his properties except for a beautiful, forested 800-acre land near Gaylord, Michigan, which became his full-time yoga retreat called the Song of the Morning Ranch. There he lived and taught together with Bob Raymer, another direct disciple of Yogananda. The retreat still functions today, though Yogananda's Kriya message seems not very central there anymore. Oliver Black was known for his luminous face, his infectious laughter, his divine love and friendship. He uncannily knew people's thoughts, and many a miracle is told from his life. He lived up to 96 years, ever remaining young and healthy and active. His passing was beautiful. It happened on September 16th, 1989. He died as only an advanced yogi can. Throughout his last day, he went into meditation. Then came the time for his final exit. He arranged himself in the lotus posture and sat quietly. His gaze was turned upward, fixing the point between the eyebrows. His soul at that moment left the body gloriously. The body gently fell backwards, remaining in the perfect lotus pose, while his soul was streaming upwards. Oliver Black had consciously entered the realm of bliss. So Oliver Black is our Yogacharya number 4. Yogacharya number 5 is Reverend Bernard Cole. And some of these folks, it's hard to find information on. Reverend Bernard was primarily in the Southern California and Encinitas area. He was unmarried in 1951 when Yogananda made him a Yogacharya, but his mindset was that I would have married in any case. And after Yogananda's passing, they started making a lot more rules after Yogananda's passing. And one of them was that ministers and monks and so forth needed to be celibate. I think for the monks, that's always been the case, but not for the ministers. So after Yogananda's passing, he left SRF because of organizational issues within SRF and the dogmatic limitations of the framework in which his guru's teachings were being placed. One such tradition was the monastic vow of celibacy. Marriage was simply not allowed for resident teaching members of SRF. To marry meant that he would no longer be allowed to represent the self-realization teachings of his guru. And that's what we have on him, but I do have a little side story about him. He was in Encinitas in 1942. There used to be a huge temple there right on the edge of the bluff. And they had some erosion, and all of a sudden they heard the building creaking, and some of the earth on the bluff there sloughed off, and it looked like they were going to lose the entire building. It had these beautiful golden domes on it. And at that time, interestingly, it was 1942, so they had to be covered with these dark tarps. But Reverend Bernard was in charge at that time in Encinitas, and he gathered what monks he had together, and they went into a desperate effort to save the temple. They tried to start bracing things up and doing what they could, and the entire temple just started slipping and right off the cliff and into the ocean. It was quite the tragedy. No one was hurt, but that was one of the things that sort of made the newspaper down there in San Diego, was that event. It was a big deal. He was in charge of that, but later he left the organization. And our sixth Yogacharya is Reverend Michael. And I could find very little on Reverend Michael except for this short little story. "As more touching was the experience of another disciple, Reverend Michael, who, feeling deep love for Master, would often repeat the words mentally, 'I love you, Guru. I love you, Guru. I love you, Guru.' One day, Master responded to a silent offering. The two of them happened to meet in the Hermitage Garden at Encinitas. With a gaze of deep tenderness, the Guru said, 'I love you too.' I think that is so sweet. And now we get to Yogacharya number 7, who is the greatest in my heart. And that's the Reverend Mother Mildred Hamilton. I'm just going to read you what Wikipedia says. So I'm going to give you 3 different viewpoints here on Mother. So this is from Wikipedia. Mother, in parentheses, or Mildred, Mother, in parentheses, Hamilton, 1925, that was the year she met Master, Seattle. Hamilton was made the center leader for Self-Realization Fellowship in Seattle, Washington, and ordained a minister in 1950 by Yogananda. He gave her the title Yogacharya in 1951, one of 6 worldwide. We know, of course, that's an error. It's one of 7 worldwide. After Yogananda went into Mahasamadhi, a yogi's final exit from the body, she continued as center leader until 1958, when she was dismissed from her role as a center leader in SRF. After that, she continued on her own and held meetings in her disciples' homes and centers in the Northwest in Canada. She was a lifelong disciple of Yogananda's and never formed her own organization. Hamilton also had great reverence for Swami Ramdas, who she says helped her gain complete realization of God after Yogananda's Mahasamadhi. Mother attained Mahasamadhi on 31 January 1991. So that's the Wikipedia account of Mother. And now I want to give you Mother's own account of herself as a disciple. And this comes from our latest issue of the Cross and Lotus Journal. "My love for my guru was so great that I would have walked from here to Los Angeles to be with him. I wouldn't miss an opportunity ever. I worked and worked and worked each time I had the opportunity to go until I finally made it. And I may have told you this before, but the last time I was there, we didn't have any money. And just at the last minute, I wanted to go so badly the money was provided and we were able to go. So I was telling the master this, how grateful I was that God had arranged it so that I could be with him. And he called one of the sisters and whispered in her ear. Pretty soon she came back and put something in his hands and he gave me $20. I said, 'I can't accept this from you, sir. I wasn't telling you to ask for money. I was just telling you to show you how good God has been so that I could come and be with you.' He said, 'Take it.' And I said, 'No, sir, I don't want it.' He said, 'I want you to take it.' And I refused and refused. And finally he said, 'Mildred, take it.' And so I said, 'Yes, sir.'" I love that story because it speaks to Mother's devotion, love for her guru, and how obedient she was to him. She loved him. I don't think of mother as a disciple, you know, I think of her as my guru. So it's so interesting and fun in a way to hear her speak of her own discipleship. And then finally, we have another reading from the same journal. This is what mother says. This is my constant prayer for you at all times, that you be lifted up and that you can come face to face with the Lord within yourselves. Release this imprisoned splendor within yourself so that it may shine for all the world to see, and that those who contact you will become changed as a result of having known you. You will find that your life becomes totally different, that you're totally different people, and that you find joy and happiness no matter what you have to go through. I find that so in my own life. No matter how much pain I have, still I am never separated from God. He is always with me. I sit and talk to him, and he answers me in my own consciousness, and it is beautiful, a wonderful experience, one that I hope that each one of you will have. And I ask God's blessings upon you all. And that last little bit sums up Mother for me. She was so dedicated to our progress, to our realization, and she had so much love for us. And if she told you to improve or do something better, that's the sign of love. You know, she cared. She cared how we did. So those are just brief descriptions, brief stories of the seven Yogacharyas. And I hope they provide some inspiration for our own lives. They did so much for God, and we are all the beneficiaries. And before we close, you know, I was always so appreciative of Larry being so intrepid to jump on airplanes or take any opportunity he could to go to the Yogacharya's Black's Ranch out in Michigan, or to go see Roy Eugene Davis in Georgia, or to be the first one of us to go out to Anandashram. So before we close, Larry, did you have any little anecdotes to share about Bob Raymer, or did you have a chance to meet Yogacharya Black?
Yes, I did. In 1984, I met him. And it was quite nice. I really enjoyed spending time with him. And he was very.
Could you speak into your mic a little bit?
Oh, sorry. Oh, I see. Hang on. I'm going to drop these off.
Yeah, he reminded me of my grandfather. There's a funny little things that happened with him. And then he was going to invite me up to the lodge, or the bigger house, so kind of a place that they had many bedrooms and had a beautiful living room. And then he asked me then, in order to approve me for that, because it included Kriya, he said, do a Kriya breath for me. So, you know, he didn't know what I was doing inwardly, but he watched my body and the duration of a, you know, 20, 30 second Kriya breath. And he says, you can come tonight and come up at 7:30 this evening. And then when I was with Bob Raymer in that same place, and David and Kate and I were there with Bob Raymer in that same building, it's a really nice feeling in that lodge. So it was a nice experience. And he did that when he was living there, and when he retired, and I met him, he had been retired for many years, and that this was a normal practice that they would meet every night. And so, and there'd be a reading, or he would talk, and it was very, very nice feeling in the room with both.
You know, I just think you're so blessed to have gotten to meet these saints, you know, and yeah. I just appreciate that you're willing to go see them. I don't know what, you know, I'm thinking sometimes when I think these guys are going to be around forever, but, you know, I've begun to realize that's not how the world works.
And yeah, so, God arranged it. You know, it's the first person that I met outside of Mother, and not sure. I'd been to SRF down in California and stuff, but I asked her permission to go and do that too. It didn't feel right, not just going without talking to her. And so I put it in a question to her when I met with her privately and asked her for permission. And she said, oh, of course you can, and give him my regards. And so we talked a little bit about Mother and the circumstances with SRF, and he basically dissuaded me from worrying about it. It's all been taken care of, and there's bigger things, more important things to do. One thing he said regarding that, and I'll finish, is that he said, you know, look, you really have to just focus on the third eye and pierce that. Go through it. That's the important thing. None of the other things are important. Very nice.
I love that one-pointed concentration.
Right, right.
Just do one thing. It makes it simple, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll pray with me, oh Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. Bliss. Amen. Bless you for being here tonight. It's the most wonderful path and purpose that we share together. And may God keep you and bless you until we meet again.